sponsor told me to read the first 103 pages. And me listening to my sponsor the way I did started on page 107. And the story I related to from the day, the gift called life. It was all about NA in Western Pennsylvania. And when I became programming chair, I knew that I wanted this man to be a speaker at our retreat. And I was at a meeting after I became programming chair, and it was a back to basics meeting in Johnstown, and they read A Gift Called Life, and I shared that I really wish I knew how to get in touch with our speaker. And I had one gentleman in the back of the room raise his hand and said it was his grand sponsor. And it was really moving for me.
He gave me
his phone number. I called the gentleman, left a voicemail for him, and he called me a couple of days later because I was afraid, having had his story published in the basic text, that he might not want to do it because he gets requests like this all the time. He said it would be an honor and privilege to come talk to us. What I would like to tell about the gentleman is I found out today that through him being a sponsor and on down the line, he is the top of six generations of addicts. And there's at least one representative from each of the sponsorship family here at this retreat. So without anything further to do, I would like to introduce you to Bob P. from the Upper St. Clair group of Narcotics Anonymous in the South Hills area.
That's right, the bubble. My name's Bob, I'm an addict. Actually, this might be the first or second time I've been asked to speak at a place. I mean, the function is big. That story in that basic text, if it did anything, it was a humbling experience for me. And I'm grateful it's not in there in a new one, to be honest with you. That's a whole new story in its own. But the theme for this is, the journey. The journey that girl made to come up here to get that book from the man that had 37 years. For me, that's what the journey is about, is to reach out and to be responsible and to be accountable for the time I've been clean. I see clean time countdown, and sometimes I get uncomfortable with it because just some of the things I view and watch throughout my day being clean. I don't want to air all that stuff out right now, but the journey for me was when I got clean July 12th of 1975. Thank you. And when I got off that bus in Williamsport, and there was a guy there to pick me up at the bus station. His name was Jeff. Jeff Cousins from Philadelphia. He took me to this treatment center, and that's where I got introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. And that's where the journey really began for me. Just like the girl that came up here, I just felt the pain and the joy, when she was walking up here. And to me, the longest journey that I ever took in 35 years clean was from here to here. Because there's time when I first got clean, they never had the love lines that they have. I think that's what they call them, love lines. And you stand up when somebody else is standing up, and you can't. For me, I get confused on who's got the one day or who's got what. And I sit there and think sometimes. I'm just wondering how many of them people that are getting up in front of public and hugging that person, how many of them people are calling that person in the middle of the night to see if they're okay. I'm not trying to step on no one's toes here. I'm stepping on my toes. See, I got to close my door. So when I say that to you, you got to say that to me. That's accountability. When I expect that from guys I sponsor, they give it back. They say, hey, Bob, you ain't been to a meeting. You know, stuff like that, you know. And I love that. That's why I'm clean all this time, you know. And I hear guys that are around me that I love and care about, and they say, here's my number. Give me a call if you need to talk. Give me your number so I can call you. That's how I do it. I'm just how I do it. I'm not saying that I'm better than anybody. It's just the way I taught. I can only teach what I've been taught. I got clean with guys that, would you like to go to a meeting tonight? I never heard that. I've never heard that the first 5 years I was clean. Never. Hey, we're going to a meeting. We're coming to get you. Be ready at 7 o'clock. Well, the meetings don't start till 8. Yeah, we're setting up. We're tearing down. We're making the coffee. There was no coffee. All they had was hot water and instant coffee. And this is how sick I was. I'd take the instant coffee up in Williamsport. I'd put the coffee, and I'd take the cream, and I'd mix it up, and I would sit there and think, oh, this is like brown heroin, you know, mix. I mean, I was still sitting there. I'd sit there, and I had to stop drinking it with cream. And then I just stopped. It was sick. A lot of them small things, you know, I think back on. But I remember getting clean, and just, it wasn't peak. If somebody wasn't at the entire meeting would call that person. Where's Bob at? I mean, it wasn't Bob, it was somebody else. I was always there. I didn't miss the meeting for 5 years. But, we were concerned. In the beginning, it was all fake. You know, we faked it. Oh, yeah, I care about him. But it was about keep showing up, and I kept showing up. You know what I mean? I'm falling in love with someone today I've never met. How about that? So, when I asked my sponsor, Tony, hey, Tony, you got $2. I need $2. A pack of cigarettes. I can't remember what I wanted, a hoagie after the meeting. And he gave it to me. It was the first time someone gave me anything in a long time. I was used to stealing stuff. The journey continues. I remember being in a convention. It was so enlightening that it was black. The room was pitch black. And somebody had a candle, and they lit the first person, and then the two people lit two more candles, two more, and before you know it, the whole room was lit up. And I'll never forget that. It made such an impression on me, because that's how it is for me. When someone reaches out and calls me on the phone, and I have 35 years, they're calling me, hey, Pum, what's up, man? I know you're dying. I know you want to hang yourself right now. You okay? You need me to come over here and talk to you? You know, that's what it's all about, man. Just loving somebody. That's why I'm still clean today, because people love me clean. I'm not saying they like me, because there's a lot of people that did not like me and still don't like me, and they still love me. I was never refused a hug yet. Never. I mean, I wasn't into hugs when I first started in '79, but I got used to it. I remember when you hold hands, and I wouldn't hold nobody. We wouldn't even hold hands, and they started holding hands, and then the hugging came. It was after the 79 World Convention in Atlanta. It was like 150 people there at that convention. But anyway, I was born and raised in Lancaster, PA. I was born in an alcoholic, and, you know, my father was alcoholic. My brother is an alcoholic. I mean, it wasn't real dysfunctional, but it was a dysfunctional home. My father and mother fought a lot. It was always over my father drinking. I was 12 years old, and my mother passed away. I don't remember too much of my childhood, so you're not going to get bored with all that. So I just remember some of the things I thought that I know that I'm going to be able to do whatever I want to do whenever I want to do it, because my father's either drunk, working, or coming off of drunk. And he was always a blackout drinker looking back on it. I didn't know what it was, but I just knew he forgot what he did the night before. So that's where the stealing came in. And between my brother and I, we used to rob him every time he got drunk. And I guess he woke up thinking he had a good time the night before, but I mean, how much good time can you have on Black Label, you know? There's only a few people laughing about that because that's an old beer. That was Schmidt's in Philadelphia. But I used to steal the liquor from my father, the beer stuff, take it down on the corner with when my mother passed away. I used to hang out a lot. I was addicted to hanging out because it wasn't a very pleasant situation in my house. Like I said, he was either drunk and he was a mean drunk. And after my mother passed away, he was a lot meaner. A lot of the things that I don't like about myself today still, it came from him. He taught me the things I'm about. And it's been hard to shake that stuff. But in the last 4 years, I probably grew in the last 6 months more than I did the first 35 years. The last 4 years is when a journey started for me. I just remember growing up as a kid, I'm only saying this looking back on it, because back then I thought it was normal. Like when someone asked to pass something across the table, just the language they would use. If my sister wouldn't eat her dinner, she would try to sneak it to the dog. She'd get knocked off her chair. I thought that stuff was normal. That's the way it was. You know, my father got paid the bills, got drunk with what was left over, and I just thought that was life. I didn't think I was... I don't think we were a poor family, but we were poor in a lot of other ways. After I got clean, I found that out. But I was trying to compare myself to my older brother, Butch. He was a tough guy, greaser. I could never meet them measurements that he put out there, because it was a negative measurement. But, in 68 and 69, there was a lot of racial tension in the country. In my high school, there was a big auditorium, and there was this guy up there. He was kind of like Jesse Jackson, saying black power this and black power that. And all the white guys were outside the auditorium, looking in, listening, and they were saying what they were going to do and this and that. And I opened the door and yelled, white power. I'm ashamed of that. But looking back on it, I was thrown out of school, was expelled from school. I did it to get attention. I couldn't get the attention like my brother did, like fighting and with the girls and all that stuff. So I guess that was my way of getting it. Went in front of the school board and they said, if the same situation came up again, would you do it again? And I was going to say no. My father said, he better, because if he doesn't, I'll kick his ass when he comes. He was half drunk when he said that, so... He was like Archie Bunker, but drunk. And I wish I could laugh about that, but I used to laugh about that. But when I see kids, when I go into a store now, Giant Eagle or something, and I see a parent treat a kid the way I was treated, I want to go up and choke them. And we still act the same way. And I think that's why I keep coming to meetings. Because I learned things from the 12 steps to spiritual program, not religious. I've learned so much from you people. Still to this day, I've learned so much. That's why I keep coming. They said, why do you keep coming back? It's my life. It's my way of life. That's how I'm glued together. I wear a lot of stuff on my sleeve, too. That's just the way I am. So, excuse me. So, I was 15 when I was thrown out of school. The only thing you could do was work in a kitchen someplace. So I worked in this kitchen. Well, it was a steak shop in Lancaster. I kind of liked Philly steak pizza and stuff like that. And that's where I met this girl. And this girl and I started seeing each other, and she was in high school, Lancaster Catholic High School. And back then, in early 70s, 71, it wasn't okay to become pregnant. She became pregnant, and my daughter was born. Her name is Kelly. She's 38, 39 now. She'll never hear this tape, so she won't get mad at me. But maybe she might. But, and when she told me that, I mean, I was so young and immature, I couldn't go. Who was I going to go to? My father? Go to my brother? I had no family members to go to. I was thrown out of school. My mother passed away, and I had no one to turn to. No relatives. And I'm not saying poor me, and I'm not saying I used drugs because my mother had square nipples either. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that. I'm saying I had nobody to turn to as a kid. I was 15, 16, 17 years old. I had no one to turn to. So I said to her, you know what, let me think about this. And I started hanging out on the corner again. And I seen the same thing was going on. Just a couple of years went by, like 2 years or something. 17, 18, yeah, about 2 years went by. And everybody was doing the same thing, only something a little stronger. Instead of drinking, they were doing other stuff. And it doesn't matter what we used or how we used it, like the program says. And they were using this and that, and I said I was never going to do that. And I said to myself, this is not the way I want to live. So I went back to her and said, okay, why don't we try this? Let's try to make it work. And she said, no. I don't want to be with you anymore. So I went right to this. I started hanging out in the pool hall, and I couldn't, you know, and I started following her in the nighttime. She was going out with this guy, and, you know, I had a motorcycle at the time, had a gun, I was looking, I don't know. If I had seen him, I wouldn't have shot him anyway, probably, you know. I was a punk, you know, but sometimes I just like making noise, I guess, but I was emotionally hurt. I didn't know how to process that pain. And still didn't know how to process a lot of that pain until I came to Narcotics Anonymous through the steps, and you guys taught me how to grieve and stuff. So, and long story short, that's how I started, you know, with drinking and smoking weed and next thing. And the guy I worked for, the steak shop, was a player, and then downstairs they would have all these poker games, and while he was playing poker, I was robbing the cash register, and then my addiction escalated, and one night I was working, and I told the guys how to break in. They came in with guns and stuck up the poker game, and just one thing after another, you know, just craziness, you know. I was at this pool hall, and this guy came in the pool hall. His name was Richie Santiago. And when he walked in this pool hall, he's dead now, so I can say his name. He walked in the pool hall, and all these dope fiends would get around him like he was like a little Caesar or something. He was only about this tall. And he had to flash, you know, money. And I didn't know what he was doing, but they would go up to clean his wife's car down. And he was selling heroin. And it wasn't the heroin that I was attracted to. It was the power that this guy had. I said, I want what that guy has, man. So I got to meet him, and long story short, I was strung out, and I went down to buy some drugs, and the guy was in this, it was in a Puerto Rican section of Lancaster, and in this pool hall, and his brother just got out of prison, and he was fighting over something. I couldn't understand what they were saying. Pulled a gun out, guy gets shot 3-4 times. He goes down, I run this way, they run that way. I went right to the frying pan. I got the drugs, I just kept getting high. I was trying to go out, I guess, I don't know. And I'm sitting in this chair, and I'm looking out the window, and all of a sudden, it was like a posse. All these cops. And I knew I was going down. And the door, boom, you came off the hinges. They picked me up, threw me, and it was the first time I was dope sick. I went to county jail. And everybody that I used to sell to was in there. It was a short period of time. I'm not trying to glamorize what I did, because I'm not. It was a very short period of time, and I was not a good salesperson. Just like the cook here. I seen the cook over here, you know, just eating the food. That's the way I was. I just like my cooking, man. So that was the first time I was sick. I got bailed out. March 25th of 1973, March, April, May. 2 months later, I'm selling drugs. And this is this real quiet, nice neighborhood. And there's 15, 20 people lined up outside the door. I'm wondering why they were coming for me. What, you know, what? You know, and they, you know, and these people weren't like dressed in suits and stuff. They were, you know, like us. You know, stinky, dirty, funky, old raggedy cars, cussing, smoking cigarettes, you know. Just. So I guess they were taking pictures and stuff and watching, surveillance, whatever. So all of a sudden I'm sitting there doing something, and I heard this real loud knock on the door. Bang, bang, bang. I said, well, here we go. So I grabbed it and started running, went down the steps. The door come off the hinges, and they come down, they were right behind me. I put the stuff, flush it down the toilet, and the only thing that was wrong was in, like, a Tupperware, like a... It was airtight. After the toilet, it was floating. It was vials, and it was floating. So this, you know, I end up getting, like, I don't know, counting time, 211 and a half to 23 months in the county. My heart's in H&I. I love H&I. And I think, I don't know what I would have done if there would have been a Narcotics Anonymous meeting in that jail, Lancaster County Jail. The only thing they had there was ethnic orientation. I couldn't go in there and say I opened the doors and yelled white power. I got killed. Although I was very close with people in the neighborhood. Jimmy White was one of my best friends, and Chino. It was three of us, white, black, and Puerto Rican. We could go to any neighborhood and do whatever we needed to do. That's how we did it. We used each other to play, get what we needed to get. Harrisburg, Lebanon, York, Harrisburg, Lancaster, whatever. So I'm in the yard one day, and I said something to Jimmy White. I said, you know, I yelled out the N-word as a friend because we loved each other, you know. We were real good friends. You could hear a pin drop. I thought I was dead, I swear to God. Jimmy says, hey, so he's my man. He comes, he's plumbing. You can't say stuff like that in here. You can't be like that in here. I didn't know. It was my first time, you know. And that's the way it is in here, you know. Remember a guy coming to Brookline saying, is there any out-of-town guests? New people here for the first time. The guy stood up and says, yeah, I'm from Beachview. Beachview and Brookline right across the street from each other. He didn't know. So, but anyway. This ethnic orientation, all, you know, which you talked about black and white issues. And as soon as we were done talking about that, we'd go out in the block and fight over whether we were going to watch Don Kirshner's rock concert or Soul Train. You know what we watched. Right? Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. And that's what I wanted to listen to anyway. Here. But my buddies, I tell rock, you know, I hated rock and roll. Hated it. I was listening to some Al Green, Reverend, on the way up here. That's me. That's my stuff. You know, Luther. That's my kind of music. Smooth. It's like I wake, like to have my day nice and smooth. I don't like anything interrupting it. So anyway, I had the 2.5 and I had 23s, and I was in there for like 13 months. And you had a chance to put your name in to get out early. I can't remember. But one day they said, Plumber, get your stuff, you're going to court. So they shackled us all together, and we went in front of this judge. And the judge said, you got anything to say for yourself? And the guys say, no. 3 more months, 6 more months. He got to me, he said, you got anything to say for yourself? I said, I sure do, Your Honor. I'll never do it again. I went to ethnic orientation. I've been reading the Bible. I've been doing this and that. Parole's effective immediately. Now listen, here's how powerful addiction is. I didn't know this until I got clean in NA. When I told that judge I would never do it again, I believed it right here. In my heart, I'm just getting goosebumps thinking about it. I can remember looking at that. Oh, you think Judge Dower was tough. This guy was tough. This guy was tough. John Stone Jr., he was tough. 3 to 10 for each cell, man. No matter who you were. Consecutive, too. But when he hit that gaff-worn thing, before the noise went from there to my ear, the first thought that came to my mind was, who's holding? I didn't know it then. It wasn't until I came to Narcotics Anonymous and they started to read this stuff, and I was like, wow. Like I said, my father was like Archie Bunker, And I remember sitting there dope sick, and I'm looking at the window, and there's an air conditioner in the window. I'm like, I can get a bag or two for that. Next thought was, it's going to kick my ass. You know what the next thought was? So what? Got the air conditioner, got the couple bags, got my ass kicked. In that order. I remember sitting there one day, desperate, and I'm sitting there with a piece of paper like this. I'm thinking, how can I get some money? Some watercolors, a Q-tip. Made little dots, cut them up, and sold them like it was acid. It worked. I mean, it didn't work on him. But I couldn't give it to some. I had to give it to the biggest, meanest, ugliest dude. I mean, a badass. Because I knew I didn't have to stand there and talk him into it. Because he was standing there thinking, I know this guy ain't going to beat me because he knows if he does, I'm killing him. That's why I was only there for 5 minutes. I sold it, boom, boom. I went right down to South Duke. I was down there getting what I needed to get. And about a month or two later, I heard this. I'm walking down. I got $60 in my pocket, broad daylight, and I heard this guy with his, he had a van, heard these tires screeching. There he is, go get him. I turn around. This guy's a bowie knife chasing me down the street. He caught me. Yeah, he did. He had me on the ground. And he was coming down with a knife. He knew he stepped in then. The person I'm falling in love with. And I've never seen him before. Okay? Looking back on it, I can't say it happened now. I didn't know what was that. All I knew was I wasn't giving up that $60. I wasn't caring about my life. I didn't care about my life. I wanted to get it in, man. I was sick. I didn't know there was another way. And by that time, I didn't want to live like that. If you remember when I was on that corner and I said, I don't want to be like this. I want to be like that. Because I had different people I would hang with. You know, that's the way we are, chameleons. And I had a job in a work release program. That didn't last long yet, because once I got out of jail. When I did the 2.11, that's 23s. I got out of jail. They took me back to the county. I got a taxi cab from the county prison right to my friend's house. And he said, what are you doing here, man? Didn't you learn anything? You've been down for 30 minutes. I said, no, I just want one. That's what he did. He said the same thing. He laughed. Yeah, you want one. He says, give me all your money. I said, you don't understand. He says, I do. Give it here. And he didn't. I gave him like $20. I forget what, I didn't know what it was at the time. And they were right. He had to make two trips. Lenny's sister, that was his name, Lenny. And he was strung out too, by the way. His sister liked me. I don't know why. Seriously, I don't know why. And I hadn't been with a woman physically probably for 2 or 3 years. And I had everything you could think of on me. And, so anyway, she gave me money because I was going to pay off my parole and move to Florida and geographical cure. Same as that when the judge hit the gavel on the table. I swear to God, I was going to pay my parole off. As soon as she took that $1,000 and put it in my hand, the first thought was, I can double this. Go up to New York City. Went to Hell's Kitchen. There was a 10-year-old kid copping for me. The first time, I was sitting on 48th and 8th, and I looked across the street. There was nobody there, but I looked across the street and I seen me. I said, what are you doing, man? You just spent this, you know, we just went through this thing, you know. It was the first time I've seen that and felt that. And it was weird. On the way back, you know, I'm just going to do it a little bit more. I'm going to take a train ride from New York to Lancaster. A little bit more. He was gone. And then he said, I can't believe you just did that to my sister, man. You're sick, man. You need help. You just beat my sister. She's trying to help you. It was the first time. Even when I was stealing money from my father, it was the first time I had a bad feeling in my gut. And I didn't know what it was at the time. I know now it's shame and guilt. And someone was trying to reach out and help me, really help me, for no, unconditionally. She didn't want nothing from me. We never kissed or went out on a date. She just liked me as a person. She was trying to help me. And that was the end. It was the beginning of the end. That day, I was going through a trash can trying to scrape something up and get something in me. You could get 3 bottles of beer, Reading beer, for like, I forget what it was. I started drinking this beer. I said, what am I doing? I don't even like this shit. I just put it down. I said, I had enough. You know, and I went to the methadone program, and you had to go there to tell them, justify to them why you needed treatment. And I went to my parole officer and told him I need help. I need to go to this treatment center. He said, you ain't never going to make it. It's not up there. And Chino, one of the three amigos, he went there. And he used to come back on the weekends. Once in a while, every month or every 2 months, he'd come back, shoot a bag of dope, drink something, and go back up in this mountain someplace. I don't know where it was at, up in Williamsport. It was a treatment center. People relocated. And I said, that's what I want to do. I want to learn how to do that. I didn't know he was, you know, relapsing, but... So, and I knew the program was behavior modification. I didn't care. This is about when that guy was chasing me down the bush. I got tired of running. I was so tired of running. Excuse me, I couldn't come out in the daylight. Just feeling bad about myself, the guilt, the shame. I didn't know at the time what I was feeling, but looking back on it, just felt worthless. I was thinking about suicide. And when I got off that bus, and Jeff was standing there. He's still clean today, too. And I got in the car. He had a shaved head. I thought, boy, I'm really in trouble here, man. And that's when shaved head wasn't cool. And I didn't know where he was going to take me up in this mountain. That's where we went, in this middle of this mountain, right next to Allenwood Federal Prison. And some people can't identify with this, but from that day, when I walked through that door, looking back on it only, the moment I walked through the door till this day, I have not had an obsession to use anything. That's a miracle. See, the reason why I say that's a miracle is because I see so many people that I love and care about. Just like that girl came up here with one day, you know, when it's on you. I can't, from day one, my first day clean till now, it's never been on me. So I can't identify with that. I try to, so when someone relapses, I don't try to pretend nothing. I can't identify with that. I can only try to have empathy and try to be there for you each time you do it. Who am I to say, well, I'm not going to do this. If you do it one more time, I'm not going to. I'm just talking about me now. I'm not trying to step on that toe. For me, this is the way I was taught. So I got guys I've been with for... Billy just went to treatment again today. Probably 25 rehabs, 30 years. This dude was serious. He took a shotgun to his stomach and pulled the trigger. And it went off and still living. He just went to another rehab today. I don't know what it takes. I know my responsibility is to be there for him. Because NA has taught me to be there. Well, you guys taught me to be there. The book tells you to tell me that. And that's what, I mean, you know what I'm saying. So I went to this treatment center, and it was behavior modification, and I'm not going to get into all that nonsense, but they taught me the 6 ways to stay clean, and it was all Narcotics Anonymous based, sponsor, home group, you know, hitting your knees, reading literature, steps, reaching out. And every Sunday and Wednesday, people would come to this place for a meeting. And if you wanted to, you could get someone's name and number and move in with them in Williamsport. And I came to this place with a brown paper bag. I relocated from Lancaster to Williamsport. I had a brown paper bag. And it was a pair of blue jeans. And on both sides, it was big, round, blood stains on both sides. You just go like that. And that's the only pair of pants I had. So you can imagine, I was like, I don't know, 150. I don't know how much I weighed. Skinny and funky. And I just know that when you left that place, if you left AMA, they would keep your clothes for 30 days. And then they would cut them loose to the people there. And I was watching this one dude. And I knew he was rolling. He had some nice clothes. I saw him getting them clothes. He rolled and I got him. And then I would go to when I relocated to Williamsport, I asked this one guy if I could stay with him. He said, sure. And there was 2 of us. I was sleeping on the floor. We took turns, floor, sofa, I can't remember. And then both of us got our efficiency, and we went back up. It's kind of like that candle. We light that one candle, the journey. And we kept reaching out, and we went up and got 2 more guys, got 2 more apartments, 2 rooms, and it just kept getting bigger. It was already big when I got there in 75, so we didn't start it. I mean, it was already started from guys from York, Harrisburg, Lancaster, Philly, and that was our, I guess, 3-quarter house, the way things they have today, but it was free then. That's the way I was taught. I can't teach you any other way. When I was single, I always had somebody sleeping on my sofa. I'm saying for me, this is how I was taught. Didn't charge them nothing. Please don't steal my stuff. In all them years, over 10 years, I had guys staying with me. I only had one guy steal from me. And he was a friend of mine from Newcastle. And I said, if you don't, his father's a millionaire, if you don't get my chain back by lunchtime, I'm having you arrested. So, and sometimes I miss him times. I got to be honest with you, where it was just nonstop. And some of it was because I don't miss the part where I would take the credit for when someone got clean, because I used to do that. Or it'd make me puff up my chest and all that. And it's the extreme opposite now. I'm just uncomfortable when he was saying about the basic text, and that's why I'm glad it's gone. And he's got this and he's got... For the person that stood up with one day today, what I did 35 years ago is not going to keep me clean today. I still have to get up, get in front of my in front of God, get on my knees. I always say go to the foot of the cross, and that's where I go. And surrender each day. That's the way I've been taught. So, I got a job at that treatment center as a cook, chef, whatever you want to call it. And meetings, sponsor, home group. And up there was a type of, I don't know what time it is. 0 o'clock? Huh? How long I got? Oh, good. So, I just remember when I was clean, I used to be so excited to go to meetings. Because it was a highlight of my day. And I'd get there an hour early. And I still do that. I still get I like to be early. I like to stay a little bit after. It's just the way I do it. That's the way I was taught. You come to my own group on Thursday night, and there's last Thursday was like 8 or 9 of us, like 45, almost an hour before the meeting. And that's kind of, I don't know, it's just the way I like to do it. So anyway, I got this job at when I was at that guy's house and I got my own efficiency in Williamsport. I would just go up one side, down the other until I got a job. I was making $1.50 an hour in this shoe factory, in this like snack shop. The guy was blind. At least he said he was. I remember speaking of blind people, I don't know if anybody here remembers Esther Robinson. She was a Dot Tally sponsor. Remember we're going up to Braddock, the friendly group. And I walked in and I kicked her toe. I kicked her foot by mistake. She tripped over her foot, Esther's foot, and she was blind. She goes, "Plumber, watch where you're walking." Sometimes I question her sight too. But, you guys missed two beautiful women, man. I'm telling you, straight up, they were two most beautiful women I've ever met in my life. They taught stuff. And, matter of fact, Dottie, if you talk to her on the phone, when we would talk, or she talked, I don't care who you were. You say, "Okay, I'll see you later." Whoa, we're going to pray. We're praying before you hang up. Thank you. Some of the things that are just running through my mind, I want to try to get out there, and it's kind of like I don't want to interrupt the thing I'm going on, but if I had to live the 35 years over again, if there was one thing that I would do that I didn't do, I don't regret it, but I did pray morning, at night. I encourage you, people that, not just new people, but I encourage you to pray as often as you can. For me, I'm getting so much out of prayer the last 5 months. That, I mean, there's 4 hours a day, 5 hours a day sometimes in the last 5 months with the conversation that I'm having with God. And the things that I'm getting back from Him is just overwhelming. And it's got nothing to do with things I'm asking for, like it says. I'm just asking, you get it? I remember 4 years ago, I'll get that in a minute. I want to get back to getting from Williamsport to Midland. I'll talk about that in a second. So I met this girl. It was my first wife. I've been married 3 times. Met this girl. They say it's unwritten, but it says you shouldn't hook up with nobody until you got a year clean. On my anniversary night, or one day after, maybe. I asked this person that had 3 months if she wanted to hook up. She said, sure. So I drove up to the woman's place she was staying at, blew the horn, she jumped in, and we started playing house. She was my first wife. Oh, so immature. Paul. I was so immature, jealous, possessive. I'd sneak up the steps just to try to catch her on the phone talking to somebody, you know. One day I was sneaking up, and they were squeaky steps, and she said, I hear you out there. She's a very good friend of mine today. She had 30 years in relapse. She lives in Midland. She has a couple years again. I just couldn't imagine that. Oh. But anyway, I think she stopped doing, I know she stopped doing what she did, which is what keeps us clean. Meetings, reaching out, and reading, you know, just keep reaching and keep reaching and keep reaching until you're tired, and you reach out and you grab somebody else and hang on. And that's just how you do it. That's how I do it. So that's how I got from, and her father had some money, and he had some pull down in Midland, and he got me a job in a steel mill. And anything that we wanted, he got us. And we were just too immature to be married. I mean, one day she just says, I don't love you. I went out. I was crushed. And so I just stayed in Beaver County. And I was going to you guys say the other fellowship. I say AA. Sorry. That's just my story. And I was at meetings, and there was no fiends just like us. And I would put them under my wing. Ed Curry, Dennis Haggerty, them, so Roger Patton, Rick Hill. Just start an NA meeting. Yeah, my sponsor, my Dick Lang, my AA sponsor, said, yeah, it's one meeting. What are you going to do the rest of the week? Well, God had another plan. That person I'm falling in love with, that I never met, he had another plan for me and for Dennis. He used us like tires, like a beat up old tire, man. Went to Gateway. They said we could use their place on Wednesdays. And they were thinking about a name to name the group. And I remember this guy that worked at this treatment center I went to, who's from Philadelphia, in his home group. And he'd get up there and pound on the table. He was so charismatic. Oh, I loved him. He was a freak for getting people, helping people get clean. Oh, I loved him. Next year this time, half this room's going to be dead drunk or in jail or shooting over. And I thought, not me. I'm on this side, man. This 50%. I'm listening to this dude. And he would go through the 6 ways to stay clean. He said, you remember this and do this. There's no way. And one of them was don't pick up. No shit. I didn't know then. I was like, you know. But so we decided, you know, his home group was called the Double Bubble Group. And that's how the Double Bubble Group came about. May 10th of 1978. And the only reason why I'm saying that isn't because I started that meeting, because I didn't start that meeting. We started that meeting. Dennis wasn't part of that group yet. He came in like 6 months after, 5 or 6 months after. He had been going to the meetings. I thought he was clean. One night he came in. I said, Dennis, you speak for me tonight. So I just picked up. I wanted to say, so what? We didn't have no speakers. Anybody want to be a secretary? Yeah, me. Good. Why? I just got clean last week. That's okay.
No problem.
The blood was dry, so I, you know, that's all we had. That's all we had. A year afterwards, we're there. You know, Dennis came in. This is just God strike me dead, man. He came in with an afro, tie-dyed shirt.
Hey, man, what's up, man? What's up? Groovy.
He had no clue who he was. No clue. Acid hit. I mean, God love him. I love him so much. And after he got clean, he went back to school and has a doctorate. It's unbelievable. He went to CMU and tested at CMU, was one of the smartest men that ever tested there. Wow. And the other roadie was Ed Curry. His father was a professor, you know, grew up in his mother was a professor. And he got busted. He escaped from Aliquippa detox, and he was driving his stolen bike, his little bike, with one of them gowns, his ass hanging out the back. Now he's a licensed clinical psychologist for Beaver County. We had fun, man. Then we started then Gateway came to us and said, "Listen, you guys are bringing drugs in to the patients, so you have to this is your last meeting here." So that's what we do. We use, right? We give drugs and buy drugs. I mean, that's what we do. Whether or not we did or not, I don't know. My ego was saying it wasn't us. There was people saying they came to the meeting to visit their people and they were packed. It didn't matter. It was time to move on. It was a journey. Went down the street, got a church. It was nice. They had a kitchen. We started having hot dogs, sauerkraut at the meeting. Oh, it was nice. We got there an hour and a half early. Yeah. Sit there and talk and tell stories. You know, I did this much dope and I had this guy and I robbed this guy. Meantime, I never robbed nobody. I always had to outdo everybody, you know. But we had fun. It was fun. Them days are so nice, man. Just sometimes I miss them. And then we lost that church. We went down to another church. And this is where NA was starting to get bigger and people would come. People came to Gateway that left Gateway from different towns, like Youngstown, Erie, and so forth. And they would come there and they would get a starter kit and they would go back to their hometown and they would start a meeting. And then Dennis and I put 100,000 miles on our cars each. And over the next 2 years, 3 years, I mean, it was fun. I'm not complaining, you know. And it was, you know, just going to different. It was nonstop. As soon as we got off work, boom, shower, go home, boom. On the way to the meeting, we'd have a meeting, listen to it. Then it was a tape. There was no cassettes. I don't even think it was a cassette then. It was one of the big 8-track. We had fun, man. We had a meeting there, went to the meeting there, on the way back, Youngstown, Erie. I remember one time we spoke, I think it was down in Weirton or Wheeling someplace. You're not supposed to put anything in the newspaper or press. They had it right in the front page. Bob P. from New Brighton speaking. And our colleagues among us. Oh, my God. Them Rangers would have had fun with that, man. I had nothing to do with it, but they would have, your ego's out of line. I mean, I don't know what they would have said, but we had fun. Then area service started. And area service was, you know, somebody from Erie, somebody from Youngstown, Beaver County, and Pittsburgh, and, you know, like that Braddock group, and, you know, the Root group, and, you know, Shady Side, whatever. All them groups, we just met. There was no fighting and arguing. We just didn't do that. We sat down, we had hot dogs, hamburgers, we talked, we had a little bit of meeting. We better get something going here. We started, you know, how's your group? Do you have any problems? You need any literature? And each group would help each other, you know. You know, once in a while you might say, I want red. No one says, I want green. Green, okay. It was great. It didn't matter. It didn't matter. So, and then the bigger it got, you know, the crazier it got, and the region came, and conventions came. And I'll tell you what, God has a plan for us individually and together. I mean, it's just been... I remember being in a world convention in San Diego, and when I was sitting there, and I've seen, like, I don't know how many people were there, 35,000 maybe? And just to sit there and watch and feel what I was feeling, I just felt so special, you know what I mean, to be part of this. Just like the dude was up, like you were up here saying, just how it comes. And the only way you can get that is if you get in the middle. And the only way you can get in the middle is if you jump in the middle. I mean, just like if you had something, if you had some money in your pocket to buy drugs, and there's a group, and the dope man's in the middle of that circle, I'm getting in the middle of that circle. And I, you know, when I got clean in that treatment center, you just got to reverse it. Because the group I was in, they call it the hard-ass group, and if you can be as hard-ass about your recovery as you were on the street, blah, 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 you know. And it's true. It's true. There wasn't anything, and I can honestly say there isn't anything that I wasn't willing to do to get high or to take something from somebody. And I always hurt the people closest to me. So that's how we do it. And being a participant in the conventions was fun. Met my second wife. I'm married 3 times, I think I said that. Your second wife lasted about 1.5 years, same thing. I was immature. Wasn't ready. I was too young. I just didn't have it. I wasn't ready to be married yet. Just like how we set ourselves up being around people, places, and things when we use, I did the same thing with my marriages. I set myself up to lose. So, I lost my second wife. I didn't want to lose her either. I really didn't. But I lost her because of my behavior. Guilt, shame, all that stuff. Then about 10 years went by and I met my third wife. I waited and prayed, and you know, I believe that God put this woman in my life. I had a child. And I was clean a long time, but she wasn't clean that long. She was clean, I don't even know how long it was, 6 months maybe. We said 19 years together, but... So I remember one day, you know, we decided we weren't going to have children. And then one day she wrote a letter, a 2-page letter about she wanted another child. I made a mistake and I read the letter. So we had a planned, you know, planned child, and that's where my son was born. He was conceived on my birthday. And for me, for us, my wife had a child from the first marriage, and my son was there, and the different, you know, I'm going to keep it real short. My daughter took the back seat to my son. The reason I'm saying that is because in relationships, when we, it's not just that, when we have relationships, I sit around and watch what we do, and everybody's relationship's different and how we take stuff for granted. And I got into this relationship with my son, this throne that I have in my heart. My son was on that throne. And slowly, over the night, you know, the 10, 12 years, my son was on that throne. And everything else took the back seat. I was not loving my daughter the way I was supposed to be loving her. There was not one conversation that I had with my daughter that we weren't fighting. And I couldn't understand why at the time. I believe in my heart that it had something to do with the way I was raised, but I can't blame it. I can't say that's the reason why. I have to own it and say I was not loving my daughter the way I was. And there wasn't one day that went by, one conversation that we didn't fight. It was like oil and water. And all she was trying to say is, I love you. I want your attention too. So I chipped away slowly at my wife's heart for 15 years. And four years ago, I went to a men's group. And Doug, you know what I'm talking about. I was standing on the side of a football. My son's playing football, and the head coach is there, and I was help coaching. And I was going to church with my wife and kids because they said, well, we have to go, you have to go. So I'd sit in the front row, like you guys taught me to sit in the front row, sit people up front. And I was sitting up front because that's just where I like to sit. And the more I stayed there, like here, the hungrier and thirstier I got. So I'm standing, time went by, 5-6 years go by, and remember that whole thing with my daughter kept getting worse and worse and worse the whole time. Never had one conversation loving, not one. So I'm standing on the side of the football line 4 years ago, and this guy says, hey, Bob, we're thinking about starting this. I said, I'm in. He said, you're the only one I want to say. I said, yes, I do. I'm going to start a men's group. I'm in. How'd you know that? Him and three or four other men who I've learned to love taught me how to pray. I started to pray like I'm talking to you. Started to say, I don't want to be a mean person anymore. I don't want road rage. I don't want to be a mean father. But I don't know how not to be a mean father. I want to be a better husband, a better employee, a better person, just general. You know, I'm in a restaurant, and a waitress will say something, or a waiter will say something, and I got some smart remark all the time. Or if I eat the food and the food's okay, I'll just say, that sucks, you know. Always complaining, negative. I didn't want to be like that. I would see people that were like me, and I'd get around my brother. I couldn't get away. I couldn't wait to get away from him, from my father when he was alive. Just wave your hand when it's 8:30. This is the important part now for me. These next, you know. To make a long story short, everything that I prayed for came, just like the light was being shined on us being clean, and the fourth step that we shine lights on, it's very painful when you see that shame and that filth that you see, and the things that I was shining lights on, it was on me. You know, there was a light shined on me or my marriage. And I can tell you that when he asked me to speak here, at that time, I did not want to speak. I just was going to say no, but I thought maybe 4 months from now, I don't know, 3 months ago, maybe 4 months. And I can honestly say that I've learned more in the last 4 months about me. I feel like I've gotten so close to God. The trip from here to here. Looking back on it, I would have missed heaven by 6 to 18 inches. I would have missed it by 18 inches. I mean that with all my heart. This is just for me. This is my story. When I pray today, it's a lot different. I'm still not into the deep meditation stuff, but because my mind races and the wants and needs and me and all that, and give me this and I'll be this and I'll do this and making deals. I mean, I'm still a human being, but I don't want to be a mean person anymore. Clean. I just don't want to be that way. There's people that know me for years. People that I manage property. I'm a property manager. And there's people come up and say, what happened to you, man? People that work with me, the maintenance people, and they're like, what's wrong with you, man? I can't believe you just didn't snap on that lady. People, you know, pulling in front of me now. I'm not trying to brag about this. I'm just letting you know that after you're clean, just because you're clean 10, 15, 20, 30 years, you still, if you ain't growing, you're going. Trust what I tell you. If you're not praying, you ain't staying. I just, not because I said so. This is, it's only from my observation. And I see God, literally. I tell you what, one night, a couple weeks, I don't know, 3 weeks, four, I don't know how long, three, four weeks ago, I felt like God had my wife and me in His hands. Literally, I swear to God, it's weird. I just felt like He was right there. What a feeling that was. And I believe in my heart, it's because I keep bringing it to Him. Today I know my purpose in life. My purpose in life is to serve God through Narcotics Anonymous. I know that today. And I've known that for a while, but it's getting more fine-tuned now because by me reading and studying the steps and where the steps came from, and researching that stuff and getting to the bottom line. What is this? Why do I got to be like this? I don't want to be like this no more. I want to change. We're 35 years clean, 57 years old. 35. I want to change. I don't want to be the way I was yesterday. It's hard, man. It's hard for me. It really is. God knows my heart. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for my wife and my children. It's God and then my wife. I'm going down swinging, babe. I know that. Just like I do in my recovery. I'll do whatever it takes for me to stay clean. There's a space around me, and it's my responsibility. I have to protect that. It's my job. You guys taught me that. If I let you cross that line, it's shame on me. So if I stand here and say to you that when I first got clean, anything, I would not put anything in my body unless I read the label. That's the way they taught me. Nowadays, you say, oh, he's crazy, man. You know, he's back here from the old days. The guys used to go to meetings uphill and come home uphill. I mean, I remember one day I was working at this treatment center when I worked at Gateway. I was a counselor up there for a while, for about 5 years. And there was this piece of literature that talked about non-alcoholic beer. The people who know I'm going to talk about this. Only because I'm protecting my space. My space, or our space, is our responsibility. And of all names, it had the name is beer, N.A. Another resentment. So they had fine print, and they had that Xerox machine where you could blow it up. I blew it up to read the fine print because I couldn't read it. I only needed to see the first word. Contains 0.05% alcohol. Oh, you're crazy. That's that behavior modification shit. You'd have to drink, bop, bop, bop. Oh. So it's okay if I take 0.05% heroin, put it in a cooker, and shoot it. It's okay, right? This is so serious that it is so, I'm telling you, it's so critical when they talk about people, places, and things. I don't allow anybody in my space, in a nice, kind way today. And I'm not like I used to be, as rude and arrogant and obnoxious. Hold up. Let me share my story with you. I've seen guys with 5 years. They took me out my anniversary, Murray Schwartz. 5 years I had. They took me to Alcoma Country Club. I'm looking over, and I said to Paul, I said, hey, Paul, what's he drinking, man? It was in a brown bottle. Oh, that's that non-alcoholic stuff. What? It's like taking a ice water and shooting ice water. Sure, for me. I'm saying for me. I got to close my back door. Because if I don't close my... If I say it's okay for you, then it's okay for me. That's the only thing. I'm not trying to be self-righteous. Because I know how my addiction works on me. I've been around you guys long enough, and you've taught me that. Because I've seen too many guys okey-doke and stuff. Oh, it's okay if you cheat on your wife. There's nothing wrong with that. Before you know it, I'm an ex-husband again. It's okay. It's okay if you give that girl a ride home tonight. She don't have nobody. She don't have nobody tonight either, because I ain't giving her a ride home. I'll find you a ride. I'll give you 10 for buses. I'm not giving you a ride home. I'm 57, I'm bald and stuff, but I mean, still, I forget about it. I ain't doing it. So anyway, that's my responsibility, is to protect myself. So when I see the guy with the brown bottle, soon thereafter, he went back out. Next time you see Murray, the people know him, ask him about that. He'll tell you right now the same story. I love Murray. That's the kind of stories that we need. Unfortunately, Murray had a relapse after the five. I guess I don't know how long, 5 years, but whatever it was. I learned from this. I learned from you people that teach me stuff when you fall down. So when I talk about that relationship that I have, taking things for granted, some of the things I've learned in the last 4 months is how to love somebody like I've never been able to love them before. To have more tolerance for people. God wants to scream and slow down, let him tell you. Maybe he's in a hurry, or I just see myself racing, crashing into, go ahead. Go in front of me. God bless you, man. Most of the time it's like that. Not all the time. Most of the time it's getting better. Just like the journey from here to here. I can feel it, man. I can feel it's happening. I've got to show up, though. I have to show up. That's the battle, just being there, just showing up to the meeting. Start getting the meetings for early. Like, if you're used to getting there, like, if the meeting's at 8, instead of getting there to, like, 5 to 8 or 5 after 8, get there at 7:30. Watch what happens to your recovery. Instead of saying, when they say, amen, and racing out the door, stick around for a half hour. And all them people that you were hugging before the meeting, that had 30 days, 60 days, get their number. Don't give your number to them. Get their number. And you call them. Give them. What's wrong with me calling somebody? Hey, I was thinking about it. This one dude was blown away. You remember me? Aren't you that dude that's been around forever? The captain of NA? I just want to let you know I was thinking about you. I hope you have a wonderful day. Guess what? He called me back the next day. And the next day. And the next day. He's still clean. Not because of me. Because of the person that I'm falling in love with that I've never met. Oh, man, it feels so good. And the sad part is, I feel like I had to lose everything that meant anything to me for the last 19 years. My marriage is dead. I had to lose that to get what I got. I didn't know that 4 years ago when I was praying, God, please make me a better person, make me a kinder person, make me a more loving person. I didn't know he was going to give it to me that way. What a storm. What a storm. I thank God. Please keep me in this pain for as long as I have to be here. Yeah, that's hard to do, man. This dope stick, go get a bag of heroin. You know, go find a girlfriend. Keep me here as long as it's necessary. Because I don't want to be back here. I don't want to go through this again. 2 days after, well, my wife came up to me and dropped a bomb on me. 2 days afterward, I called my daughter from West Virginia. She came from Morgantown to have lunch with me in Southside. We had sushi. I felt, I felt like Christ was at the table with me. My God was there. From that day till now, we're like this. Well, I've got goosebumps. ain't nothing getting in the way with that either. It was a decision I had to make. I had to step up. I'm loving my daughter the way I'm supposed to be loving her now. I'm being cleaned out. And because the light was shining on her, like we shine a light on step four. It's all about it. It's what it is. It's about step four. Shining light on the problem. Look at it, deal with it, accept it, and move on. That's what we do. That's how we do it. For people, one of the other things I can't understand is like my friend Billy just went into that other rehab. I just try to say, why don't you just white knuckle it or something? I'm trying to figure out why he's got 3 weeks clean, 4 weeks clean, come out of his treatment center, he's all pumped up, and then a week later he's got a needle in his arm again. I just pray. Just pray for him. That's all I can do. I can't figure it out. All I know is that if there's people out there having a hard time, just, you know, I don't know what to tell you, man. Just keep coming back. That's what I tell people for all this time. Just keep coming back. Latch on to somebody. If you see somebody that you like being around, call them on the phone and say, and if you call the right person, you don't need to get five numbers each night you go to a meeting. Get one phone number and use it. But you'll know God talks to people through. You believe God speaks through people, right? Okay. So when you're at a meeting and you get that feeling in your heart, I like that person. That's God talking to me. Get the number. Not from a girl, for me, but. You know, I'm standing there talking. I have men that love me today. I'm telling you that I can't match it to any love I had for a woman. When I'm down on my knees begging in complete brokenness, these four guys were beside me the whole way. The sacrifice. I had to sacrifice my time for when they're down. I got to be there. That's how it works. That's how I do it, man. That's how we do it. You guys taught me that. So if anybody's like, I don't know, I want to say new person, but anybody that's trying to figure this out and you keep running your head against the wall, just slide on to somebody and let them love you and just open your mind up and listen to what they're saying. Because they're not going to tell you anything that's going to hurt you. I can't remember any time me telling anybody that's going to hurt them. I've done things around people that were dishonest that was not a good representation for Narcotics Anonymous, like buying hot stuff or stealing something, you know, it's a million times better now. So I just want to thank him for. I want to thank you for asking me. My recovery is not boring. I'm 57 for 35 years, and I'm more excited about what I'm learning, and I've never had this pain in my life, as much pain as I'm in right now. But I thank God for that pain because of the rewards I'm getting that I never thought I'd get. I could go into a restaurant and say something to somebody now and say, thank you. That meal was good. Thank you for being kind to me. And just like tonight, thank you for your respect, for listening and not talking. Thank you.